Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us on the program. We come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time, streaming live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. And we are also replayed on Sundays at 3 p.m. Pacific time at a2zen.fm. And we also archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show page. So we encourage you to check out what we have and our guests as well. We link to their websites, and we encourage you to check out the information that they have, see if it resonates with you, and follow through if there are some things that are interesting to you as far as the conversation that we have. Well, here we are in the midst of summer, and we're in 2013, and it's hard to believe that we've already surpassed the halfway mark of this year, and it's just amazing how time is flying by. We are certainly hoping that we don't have additional events that we've had early before summer even officially began on the solstice with what was called the White Fire back in the backcountry and near my home, about 5 miles north. One of those fires, once again, that I could see. And so we're hoping that things stay relatively cool. We hope that maybe, despite the National Weather Service forecasts, we maybe get some rain over the course of the next few months. Regardless, we certainly hope that everybody stays safe and well, and you're pursuing your life's dream, your purpose, and are doing what you can to make this a better world. Again, this program designed to bring you new paradigms for a new world, and today is no exception. We have in the studio with us the managing partner and founder of the Earth Keeper Alliance, the author of The Earth Keeper, Adam C. Hall. And Adam, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program and joining us in studio. Your organization is actually based here in Santa Barbara, California.
Right here in beautiful Santa Barbara. And great to be here with you, Richard, and all of your audience today.
It is extraordinary when we start thinking about the conversations that I've been having with people in regards to the Earth. There was someone who said to me not too long ago that we broke it. That we've broke the Earth. And my first thought was, okay, is it possible to fix it, or do we have to get a new one? And getting a new one is problematic, to say the very least. Tell us a little bit about the Earth Keeper Alliance and its mission.
Well, the Earth is certainly not broken. It's undergoing great and dramatic changes, and I think we hadn't seen anything yet as it pertains to the Earth. You know, my conversation is really more about what's happening with our humanity, mm-hmm. and it really raises the question, are we broken in terms of our relationship to the Earth? So out of those conversations and those questions that I asked myself around those profound question you just brought up, Richard, was, what am I going to do about it? How can I effectuate greater change, not only in my own personal life and in my community, but really around the planet and Mother Nature in particular. And along came, after 22 years in the real estate business, along came my answer to some of these profound questions that I'd been asking, is like, how can I make a greater contribution to the planet, to our people, to society? Yet I'm still a capitalist. I enjoy making money and enjoy the real estate industry. And so I founded the Earth Keeper Alliance. And the idea of the alliance is really to do two things. One is to create a greater abundance of open space availability for others to enjoy nature, to bring in and implement conservation, protection and preservation programs, as well as restoration programs around the Earth, but yet have enough sustainable development and end game, so to speak, that makes it makes sense from a business equation.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Now, would we choose to use the word that a lot of people, there are those who are struggling with this whole concept, would we use the word sustainability? Is that the right word to use, or is there something better that's more accurate?
Well, let's drill down on that. I think that's a profound question, very relevant to today, because it's that term is being thrown around quite a bit, and really it begs the question: what is sustainable?
Mm-hmm.
So the way that I've kind of approached that over my own life cycle, so to speak, I think maybe can help us shed some light on it, for example. And what has occurred for me, essentially, in terms of, I was living really the picture perfect life, the quintessential American dream, and the gorgeous wife and the three children and the big house and the successful business and the country club. You know, you get the picture here. Yeah. But guess what? I wasn't happy, and something was missing.
Well, someone say, so what? You got all this stuff over here.
Yeah, but guess what? There was still something crying and eating at me. Yeah. And the life that I was living and cultivating, ostensibly all these amazing things, was not sustainable.
Yeah.
I didn't feel that it was here for all the time. It was just seemed to be fleeting. And yeah, there were moments of happiness or joy or, you know, things that made my life reasons to celebrate. But notwithstanding that, it didn't feel sustainable. And it didn't feel that it was, it just sensed that it was constantly in a state of fluctuation and change. And so sustainability is really bringing to the land, at least from what we're doing, in perpetuity, which is sustainable preservation of that land, and ultimately including in that development that is consistent with the land,
right,
and the biodiversity in the land. So sustainability is a big term, and it is really thrown around today, and it really begs a lot of questions. But for me, it began with living a life that I found to be sustainable on my own personal level.
Yeah, I'm waiting for someone to start using the term quantum sustainability, because those two words are thrown around an awful lot as well. To me, it's fascinating. You know, you throw quantum in front of anything and people take notice, but what does it really mean? And that's why when we start some of these conversations, we start out by defining terms. Now, the Earthkeeper Alliance, and I would have to say, from my understanding of a lot of the ancient wisdom teachings, it speaks of not only who and what we are, but it also speaks of our responsibility, that we are, to use a phrase, we are stewards, that we are responsible. There's a line in an old Irish song that basically goes that you do not own the land. The land owns you. And to that end, that seems to me that's where you're coming from, is that it is our responsibility, regardless of, you know, your political persuasions, your religious affiliations, or any other categorization that you want to adhere to, that we're responsible. I even said this to I've never said this to the landlord who we rent from per se, but the land doesn't belong to him either. I don't care if he has a piece of paper that says that it does. In 100 years, he's not going to own it. As a matter of fact, you know, we'll all be dead and gone. And someone else is going to, quote unquote, own it. So the land itself isn't ours to do with as, you know, as we please. That's my understanding. And I will tell you that as I was standing on the hillside on the 27th of May, as this fire broke out in a campground north of our home, and we're watching the plumes of smoke for the first time in 7 years. And my wife and I have lived here over 7 years now, and we've been through, I think we ticked off 10 fires that we were able to. And it started with the Perkins fire in 2006. That was it was miles, dozens of miles away from us. But I saw this little plume of smoke and I freaked out. I thought, oh, my God. And I didn't know who to call because we had just moved here. I didn't know what to do. And I'm just like a proverbial chicken with its head cut off. This time I'm standing on the hillside. And, of course, I'm trying to make phone calls to make preparations that if we need to evacuate, our animals will be taken care of. My wife said something to me. She says, I don't care about anything. I just want to make sure that we get the animals out of here. And before, several fires before, we had boxes and picnic baskets and so forth and so on ready to go. And this time it's like, doesn't matter. Right. None of that stuff matters. And I heard somebody say that this is just nature's way. Well, the investigation into the cause of this fire is showing that nature did not start this one. If it had been a thunderstorm with lightning, I would have said absolutely. What was it? I don't know if it was the late 1990s or early in the 21st century. There was a major fire in Yellowstone.
Right.
That was started by a lightning strike. And it was so large that the fire service basically said, there's nothing we can do. All we can do is let it burn until the snows come. And that's what they did. And what was it? Less than a year later, the place was just blooming like crazy. That was nature's way. So Mother Nature has a way of taking care of the planet. Are we in sync with that? Your perspective at this particular point in time is that we probably are not?
Not probably. We definitively,
definitively
are
okay.
not. And I think it's very evident in, you know, simple things like the report that just came out a few weeks ago about the levels of CO2 in the atmosphere, now reaching 400 parts per million. This was the tipping point that many scientists said that there's going to be no looking back on global warming. Now, it's hard to debate whether it's global warming or not. That's not really necessarily the conversation. The conversation is we are truly seeing the effects of climate change.
Mm-hmm.
Much of it is driven by Earth's own regenerative cycles, naturally occurring. Of course, much of it is accelerated by mankind, humankind being on this planet. It's all 7 billion of us. You know, all the thousands upon thousands of coal plants that are firing off around the globe, primarily in China. So getting back to that 400 part per million level, we haven't seen nothing yet.
Yeah.
We haven't seen nothing. And these fires are going to be a greater proliferation, whether it's pure drought or flooding in other parts of the country. And you bring up a really great point, Richard, and that is, there are all these effects of what is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really like, how are we going to address the cause of it? How are we going to look within in ourselves in the mirror and say, what can we do on both a personal level, an individual level, but also collectively, mm-hmm. what can we do to effectuate a greater relationship with the earth, to create a greater level of balance with the earth? Our ancient brothers and sisters would refer to this as Aini. How do we live in Aini? In other words, how do we live in relationship with this greater earth and this greater planet of ours that has provided us with so much abundance, yet we seem to just want to consistently not be in this greater balance and this greater sensitivity.
And this matters regardless of whether we've reached the tipping point or not. I mean, some say we have. All right, we've already reached the point of no return. And whatever catastrophes, calamities are going to take place are now going to take place because we've reached that level at 400 parts per million and so forth. From the Earthkeeper Alliance perspective, again, the issue isn't about whether we can or cannot. The issue is the relationship.
That's right. It is about. I mean, I often kind of brings me a little bit of a chuckle when I hear a lot of the environmental movement speaking to, well, we must save the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems a little bit arrogant to me to think that we're going to save the earth. I would rather say, we put it this way, perhaps if we save ourselves and bring ourselves into greater balance, greater relationship with the earth, that is a little more realistic. It's obviously it's more humble, but it also speaks to something that we really can effectuate right now in our everyday lives.
I remember, and I'm talking now 15 or 20, maybe even 25 years ago, and talking with people, not specifically about the climate change and so forth, but just about events that are happening, whether they be naturally occurring events, earthquakes, typhoons, hurricanes, whatever they may be, or man-made conflicts that are going on. Mm-hmm. elsewhere, that it is a reflection of what's going on inside of us. And again, I think maybe going back to what you're saying, that relationship that we have with ourselves, with other people, as well as with the planet, with the earth on which we live, even just the space in which we live. That's that out there. What's the phrase? As above, so below is one concept.
Yes.
But that out there is nothing more than a mirror.
That's right.
And that when we start taking a look at that mirror, I know a lot of people, and I probably would include myself in this category. We got a little bit of a chuckle back in the, I think it was the 80s, when Minister Pat Robertson was praying that this particular hurricane would not hit, I guess it was Florida or the East Coast and so forth. I haven't heard them do that since, but nonetheless, I remember that and that it turned. Now, do we know that prayer in this context had anything to do with that, or would it have turned anyway? How do you measure that? How do you know? But from an esoteric, more metaphysical perspective, right, as this program is wont to look at, how could it not?
Exactly. Well, you're right on with that, Richard. I think you're tracking something really important, because if we think of our ecology, and we think of our total ecology, and we think of our total environment, oftentimes we only understand the environment of what's out there.
Yeah.
What is it that we see? What is it that we relate to? What is it that we touch and feel with our five sensory perception every single day? Versus, let's look at the total environment. Mm-hmm. Let's look at the total ecology, which is outer and inner world.
Yeah.
And when we really start to do that, it'll effectuate great change within, not only within our lives. If you remember when Wayne Dyer said, change the way you see things and the things you see will change. Now, we must begin ultimately with the inner environment. When I realized that I was really looking through the wrong end of the microscope, mm-hmm. and kind of thinking I was zooming in on what was happening in the outer environment, I did so at the expense of what was happening in my inner environment. And ultimately have spent much time and reflection over the years looking through the other end of the microscope that looks deeper within, to realize therein lies my greater truth of what I've seen and what I'm experiencing out in the world. And not always easy, because sometimes looking in that inner space could be a bit dark, so to speak. And, you know, ultimately when I headed off into that, what some say is that dark night of the soul, you go to these places to say, what can I do to effectuate greater love and light and peace within my own world? So that becomes the experience in my outer world as well.
Alan Hall is my guest, and he is the founder of Earthkeeper Alliance, and we're here talking about how to better keep the earth, shall we say. Mm. I remember even as a kid growing up, and smoking was a big deal even back in the 60s especially. A lot of people were smoking, and I would watch them smoke their cigarette and then toss the cigarette butt on the ground, and I used to think, okay, that's no big deal. It's just one single cigarette butt. But then I started thinking, but there are millions of people on the planet. And what if even just a million people in one location started doing the same exact thing? Then you have nothing but a carpet of these cigarette butts all over the place. Well, guess what? Now we do. And they're in our water, and then land, and so on and so forth. And I've even considered producing a public service announcement, public service announcement. And this is the scenario. You have the smoker who's gone outside of the building, the restaurant, wherever it is. In this case, it would be a restaurant. And he's chosen to smoke outside the building, not to offend, and of course, with the laws, obviously. But people are walking by. And there are several people that walk by who you take note of. And they're just kind of trying to wave it away and what have you. Next scene, The guy's back in the restaurant and he's sitting down. And who do you see coming in and sitting down but some of those people that just walked by? And they start taking part in his food. And he says, what do you people think you're doing? They say, well, but you were willing to share your smoke with us. We figured you'd be willing to share your food with us too. You know, we weren't secondhand smokers and we are now, so we're going to be secondhand eaters too. I mean, how offensive is that? To have somebody just walk in and start eating your food. And that's kind of the way that I feel about a lot of these things. The analogy that I put where I live up on the hill, up above Santa Barbara. And the analogy that I use is, I live at the top and I live at the bottom. Would I do at the top of the hill something that would harm me at the bottom, like flush out my radiator, let you know, change my oil and just let the oil run out on the ground and seep into the water table and so on and so forth? No. So I'm real careful about what I do up on the hill, up at the top, because I know it's going to affect people. Maybe not today or tomorrow, next week, next month, next year. Somewhere down the road, it's going to have an impact.
Yeah.
And so I try to keep that in mind. None of us is perfect. We all slip every once in a while. We try to stay conscious of what we're doing. What are some of the things that the Alliance is, shall we say, promoting and encouraging people to do, in addition to certainly going into that inner life and getting to know oneself, if you will, and getting oneself into balance?
Well, I had a similar experience yesterday as I was enjoying the afternoon over on the sand on the water. It was a beautiful day here in Santa Barbara. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, those fires erupted and kind of distracted everybody from what the heck was going on. Obviously, coming from Malibu, we were very concerned about anything of the sort because they could move pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But notwithstanding that, there was a young man sitting next to us who happened to be smoking a cigarette. He was having his own sense of his own fire, but he was burning it right there on the beach. And my wife says, you know, it's just bothering me. I mean, I said, well, let's move over there. And, you know, why do we have people smoking in what ostensibly is a space that we share together?
Mm-hmm.
This is not something that is anybody has an entitlement to say, you know, we can just do whatever we want anywhere we want without thinking it's going to affect other people. And then, of course, he puts the cigarette out and it goes right in the sand, and then the ocean comes in and it goes back out into the ocean. So there's this chain of events that occurs, like you're pointing out, that has a greater impact. You know, and so one of the things that I really like to speak to, and I'm an advocate of liberation and freedom. And rights, individual rights as well. Yet when it comes at the context of affecting others, then we really have to look at that on a closer level.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen that happening across many different areas. I mean, a lot of things are not being talked about around, you know, what we're doing and, you know, fracking and petrochemical industry and, you know, all these other things. And smoking is just an aspect of that. So one of the things that we look to endeavor as it relates to, you know, what we're doing with our group is really to think of things in terms of, for example, pick up trash. If you're walking along,
mm-hmm.
just pick some trash up,
mm-hmm.
ultimately to help clean up our environment.
Right.
It's stunning how much trash is just right here in what is ostensibly a very clean beach community.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, whoa, where is all this trash coming from? Ultimately, obviously, unconsciously, people are just throwing it. They don't really care. And they obviously are, it's a reflection of what's happening in their own personal world.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that I really speak to in around the manuscript is really to address that there's no greater responsibility that I can take than to become responsible for myself and my own actions and my own things that I am doing.
Yeah.
Because everything I am doing, and it could be as simply as exhaling, is impacting and connecting to the whole of Earth.
Yeah.
And then ultimately, as we move forward and create a greater impact, whether that's through our just being a simple consumer, or other things that we're doing, even in our own sense of expression. It could be vulgarity or anger or hatred versus love and happiness. These things are impacting the whole. And so when we think of that in terms of the alliance, we think of it in terms of when we look at a piece of land, we look at it from a holistic perspective. Right. And I recall this earthonomics. When we think of earthonomics, we're thinking of what we are doing in relationship to what we are being and what we ultimately want to express in our lives. Right. So that'll give you a little indication of my optics as it relates to impacting the whole,
right,
and from the most simple and mundane things to the greater things, whatever that may look like in each of our lives.
In my conversation with Bruce Lipton many weeks or months ago, we were talking about the evolution of man. And I asked him what he thought that would be. And I loved the fact that, and he's not alone in this, he says that the next evolutionary process in man is moving away from the individual, moving toward community. It was not about communes or communism. It was talking exactly, saying it, basically exactly what you just spoke about.
Well, it's exactly, because these aren't like woo-woo, far-out type of concepts or ideas. That's not the idea. The idea really is community. It's not simply just the proximity.
Right.
It's not simply the place where we are sitting within this neighborhood or within our house, which of course is community, but it's ultimately creating the greater community of what we're doing collectively on the planet. And can you imagine, Richard, if we could sit down with Chevron or some of these other petrochemical folks or some of the folks in the military industrial complex, and we sat down and we said, hey, how can we think about the quadruple bottom line, thinking about people, thinking about planet, thinking about profits too, but thinking about bringing peace as part of this greater bottom line capacity. This isn't a far-fetched idea at all. We're implementing, experiencing that now in our world of real estate, which is fairly archaic and dinosauric in its own way, but we are showing up for it. And if we have that dream and we show up for it within our own personal collective level, like I feel that, you know, it's an evolution, and every day I find my own challenges with it, but I'm showing up for it. And if so, my sense is we're going to see a lot of wonderful, amazing things occur and unfold on our planet going forward. It's not a catastrophe. It's really a greater sense of awareness and truth for all of us.
Earthkeeper, actually it's earthkeepermovement.org is the website, and you can get more information. The book is entitled Earthkeeper.
Yes.
And the organization is Earthkeeper Alliance. And people can find out more by going to your website and also picking up a copy of the book as well. Through that website, I'm sure there are links. And we're going to continue talking more here with Adam Hall, who is the founder of the Earthkeeper Alliance. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Stay right where you are.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and thank you so much for staying with us as we continue talking with Adam C. Hall. He is the founder of the Earthkeeper Alliance, and he has a book out called Earthkeeper. And it's great to have you in studio. I always like having in-studio guests because the energy is always different. It's more personal, if you will, eye-to-eye, if you will, and I like that. We're talking about the place in which we live, but we're talking about it quite literally on a global scale. And that on the one hand, if you and I don't do what we're doing right where we live, and I mean specifically and literally right where we live, then there will be no change. At the same time, if more people don't start doing what we're doing in their own way, thinking in terms of the community, the people with whom we live and have relationship with, and they don't do it on a global basis, then what we do will, in one sense, actually mean absolutely nothing, because the rest of the world won't change. But the theory on a metaphysical level is that it will, that there is always hope, that the optimism is very strong.
I've never been more optimistic than I am right now. As I travel around, visiting anything from Wall Street corner offices to just the more everyday simple life that some of our people are experiencing in our communities, I have a great sense of optimism about what's going on. Now, that's not to say not a tremendous concern, Richard, about what is happening, but it's optimistic about our humanity because we really have within our ability and right now to get that connection. And whether we think it's hopeless or not, if we can get that connection within ourselves of that inner and outer environment and bring that into a greater balance, at least what I found is that, well, that's the place that I can begin. If I want to be of greater service, not just to my own spirit, mm-hmm. my own life, mm-hmm. to my own community, to the humanity and to earth, this is where I must begin. If I didn't clean up my own garden that I had polluted perhaps for lifetimes, if you believe in that stuff, if I didn't clean that up, then what good would I be to anybody else to do anything of greater good for my family and others? So I'm totally with you on that. And my sense is the more that we accumulate a greater mass, the greater consciousness that will unfold from that, and it's happening mm-hmm. now, the greater it'll be able to effectuate being in balance, being in that place of, well, some say it's wonder, some people say it's awe, mm-hmm. other people just say, well, it's just about being in a place of peace and being more copacetic, so to speak, with the life that we're living on this magnificent planet of ours.
And that can take place literally wherever you live, whether it's in the middle of a city like New York or Hong Kong or out in the middle of nowhere, the Sahara Desert, or maybe a nice place like Santa Barbara. It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. Yeah. And you know, a good friend of mine, Alberto Violdo, happy birthday today, Alberto, to you. You know, he said this. He really got this one right. It's like, it's not that we find safe places on the planet. Right. There's really only safe people, and it's really about effectuating that in our own lives and the ability to do that, to share the gift that each of us has, because we all are here and we all have these gifts and we all have a story, and every single story that we have on the planet can effectuate change. It can effectuate change on the most microscopic level and also on the most macrocosm as well.
Yeah.
So the idea is, if you're not holding that capacity, then, well, so be it. That's fine. That's your choice. However, if you want to really contribute, in my sense, from my own personal journey, to get beyond my own story, you know, the tragedy of my own story that I often felt that I could have just wallowed in and just you know, gone into kind of more of a cyclical nature of, it's, you know, good one day and tough another and down another. That's not to say that life isn't about that, but it's really about the capacity we hold and how we perceive it in our lives. And the ability for me to be centered in that is helped me immensely, Richard, to dream kind of a greater dream into being, a greater dream for myself, and a greater dream for our family and others, others like you and your audience.
An analogy came to me, and this is, I mean, years ago before I ever really delved into a lot of these subjects that we're talking about, even on this program, that if the good Lord had intended for each one of us to live isolated, solitary lives, I do believe that there are enough planets in the universe for each one of us to occupy one. But the reality is that isn't the reality. That there are 7 billion of us right here, right now. And what that tells me is that we were not intended to live solitary lives, that we were intended to live a life with and of community and in community. And, I mean, to me, that's just that's just simple logic from my perspective. Whether it's right or not, I don't know. But I mean, that was the conclusion that I came to like 20, 25 years ago.
Powerful conclusion.
You know, and it's like, how? And then there are times when I go, how? Why don't other people see this? You know, I can't, you know, you can't force people to see something that you want them to see, that you see. But what was it? Oh, for example, you have a vision. You had a vision for the Earthkeeper Alliance. And you started it. You had the vision. Now, other people have joined you who have, I'll say, an idea of your vision. But it's your vision. When Steve Jobs started Apple, he had a vision. And I knew and had heard conversations to this effect that when he left, whether he retired or, in this case, passed on, the vision went with him. That nobody had the vision but him. Other people had an idea of his vision, but they had their own visions. And you see where that company is now going. It's sort of dropping down a little bit because it's not being led by the man who had the vision. If we don't live our vision, if we don't bring our own vision to life, no one else will. What is that phrase? No one else is going to toot my horn, so I guess I better. Kind of thing.
Yes, indeed. Well, exactly. And it's really about going for the greatness of your life, your greater purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what I have kind of found, Richard, is that you know, I'm a strong advocate and often say out when I'm out speaking or sharing out in the world, it's, you know, my dream is that each of you go out and live your dream, not somebody else's dream.
Yeah, yeah.
And we often find that we're kind of following the dream of the planet, the dream of what is going on out in the world and every day. But what's absent there is we're forgetting about what is the dream that we want to live? What is the life that we are meant to live in our greatest, fullest expression of our heart's desire? And we seem to get caught up, and I certainly did this. For much of my 52 years, that's exactly what I was doing. I was chasing the American dream.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really became more like the predatory capitalist. How much is a means to an end? First, really, really coming to a place that, of understanding what our the ancient ones would call, the more indigenous folks would say, is dreaming your world into being.
Yeah,
not the world dreaming you into being.
Like I think the Matrix.
I think that's really what we're driving at.
Yeah.
And what's so encouraging for me and what I'm seeing and really feel deeply is that now, like never before, both individually and collectively, we can dream that new dream into being. We can dream a life that really is more holistic, as you would say, about in our natural state of community, instead of trying to become truly the rugged individualist.
Yeah.
I'm a rugged individual. Now, nothing wrong with being an individual when we're conscious and put it in the context, well, we're just part of this greater holistic, you know, more profound ecosystem that we live within.
There's almost an attitude out there that there's something wrong with feeling you wanting to be a part of community, wanting to have community, live in community, and think in those contexts, in those ways, because there are words that describe the way that that's been tried in the past. And it's like, but the ways that it was tried in the past, that wasn't community. That was control. That was dictatorship. We're not talking about that here. It's so different that the mindset that we are talking about here is so beyond that. It's not even beyond that because it never went there. It was never about control. And it's like you talked about the end game. I haven't been able to figure out yet in capitalism or free enterprise What's the end game? This is a means to what end? I am a great uncle. My sister's daughter had a baby back in September of 2012. My parents, who are still alive, are great-grandparents. And I started thinking about all of this in the context of this new child coming into the world, thinking, my parents had us, and we had the next generation, and now there's the next generation, the fourth. Is that fourth generation doomed? I use the word doomed to continue this cycle, repetitive, going nowhere cycle. It just seems to me, and as I've shared with you before, the ancient wisdom teachings tell us that that this life that we're living is beneath us. This is not what we were created for. I think it goes back to what you were just saying. Create your dream rather than the dream creating you. And right now, the dream is creating us over and over, generation after generation.
We now can change that,
mm-hmm.
like never before. And I say that because of my own personal experience and the life that I'm living right now. And it, because I too was living in that space where I had no clue or idea about community. Everything in my life seemed as separation from the idea that we are just holding the greater oneness. Now, that's a big term and a kind of a woo-woo term, but
yeah.
it's really saying something that is, hey, when we can understand and feel the consciousness of that, and I was speaking to myself, Adam, hey, you can feel a greater connectivity to that community. And the separation that I lived in my life was literally killing my spirit. Essentially, I had a lot of things, but there was still that aspect that said, hey, wait a second, come here, hold this, feel me, connect to the earth. Look at what Mother Nature is sharing and saying to you.
Yeah.
Because she certainly has been my greatest teacher. As a matter of fact, in wilderness, I found the preservation of myself. Now, Henry David Thoreau said, in wilderness, I found is the preservation of the world. But hey, I found the preservation of myself. And in that place, which is really a wild place, a place of wildness, not in the sense that you're being wild and crazy and
right.
off the charts. You're being a sense of what I found to be innate within my own DNA and my own sense of being was right. this sense of wildness. And there I found the freedom to end the separation of this perhaps lifetimes of patterning that always kept me apart. Mm. Always kept me a sense of not being in community. So we breed that in our culture. We breed that as our identity. We breed it in terms of being a consumer. We breed it in terms of our addiction on this earth to all things material, except for, of course, reality, which is unbearable in so many ways. But when it really comes to it, what I found is, hey, get this greater consciousness, get this greater awareness that you are not separate, that your being and your doing are really one and the same thing. So guide yourself accordingly, because it's your responsibility, speaking to myself, it's my responsibility, Adam, that I show up and it's my duty to show up for myself and for my life and for my family to do that. So, you know, that's what I'm endeavoring to do, and I'm with you on that, because that potentially holds the great hope of our time to move past some of the paradigms and things that we have ensnared us.
Yeah, I think that's a good word, ensnared. And there is a certain I mean, in conversation with people about this very subject, you know, they often say, well, why don't you just stop? Why don't you just stop? And I think that it isn't as much a question of the capacity to stop. I mean, in other words, just a cold turkey, if you will. It is also the realization that there are certain things that at present we need to be doing to sustain our lives. But that doesn't mean that we can't be conscious about what we're doing, because there are so many different ways of – I mean, I learned in the business that I'm in broadcasting and working with computers, there's always more than one way to get something accomplished. There's always a workaround. There's always a back door somewhere that is even more efficient and works even better to accomplish the result that we're looking for. You know, it's not like there's only one way, and if this doesn't work, well, then it can't be done. I think that's one of the things that I pride myself on, and when people come to me with a challenge, I don't think I've ever said, no, we can't do that. That's not possible. It's usually, if I can't come up with the answer right then and there, I say, give me a few hours or days or whatever. Give me some time to think about it. Let me see what I can come up with.
Absolutely. And you nailed it with that, you know, because life is about possibilities, not about probabilities.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I love that because, you know, it's one of the things coming to life every day. When I come to it, it's coming fresh. It's coming from a place of, I've never been there and done that. I get to be present with you in this moment, that is in this instant, with your guests and your listeners, and right now in this moment. Mm-hmm. And it has not happened in the past. It's right now. So yeah. I love the idea of bringing that being part of ourselves together with that doing part of ourselves. And when I think of this in nature, I'm reminded of the hummingbird that is stillness yet in motion, even as it flaps its wings some 15,000 times or whatever it is,
a
minute. But yet it's still, and it's still present. So that gives great impetus to how, you know, I'm finding to lead my life, to show up in that presence, to being in that place of being and not simply doing all the time, because it's exhausting.
Yeah,
it's exhausting just doing that.
That business of stillness in motion, if you will, I get that when I'm out at the wharf or on the beach and I'm watching the seagulls, and all of a sudden you'll see one catch the breeze and just hover. It's not even moving its feathers, not even moving its wings or its nothing. It's just, it's like it's just floating.
Yeah.
And I'm going, would that be cool to be able to do? To just float there on the breeze like that.
Well, we may not have wings, but we can certainly have the experience and the ecstasy of that presence, yet in the place of doing things. And I practice that in my bringing that to my life as much as possible, because it is cool, it's powerful, and there's must be some greater sense if you think about that, because the hummingbird is drinking the nectar.
Yeah.
And that's to me like drinking the nectar of life.
Yeah.
If you can fulfill that presence in that balance of that, to bring that into my everyday practice, everything in my life, bring it to my business of really showing up and, who I am and what I do are one and the same thing. Bringing those two things together. And it is more than a possibility.
Through the Alliance, and I would like to talk a little more on the practical, down-to-earth side.
Yeah.
What does the Alliance do?
We acquire large tracts of land that are slated for development, and we implement conservation, preservation, and restoration plans. I call that CPR.
Mm-hmm.
So we bring some CPR to land development projects that are going to be really built into perhaps even small towns. For example, there's a project we've been working on, And I'm concerned now that it's the timber company's really going to get their hands on it. But we're still very, very much in the queue here for this. And it's entitled for 4,000 homes and two hotels and two golf courses and a ski mountain around a lake, pristine wilderness. This type of project would not only decimate the land, but just think about the carbon imprint that would be associated with this project on an ongoing basis. So the idea here is that we will wipe out about 98% of that entitlement. You know, no hotels, no golf, no ski resort, but we would just keep about 50 legacy ranches where people can come with their families and enjoy the property and preserve, like I mentioned, most of that 7,000 acres.
Yeah.
So that's an example of something that is that we're up to. We just finished a project up here, up the coast, up in Big Sur. Not that long ago, it had 1.5 miles of ocean frontage. Now in conservation. I wrote a couple conservation plans, shrunk the entitlement, the development right of it. So preserved it for in perpetuity, as a matter of fact. And not only did the cleanup of the property, because there was about 40 million tons of junk on it, believe it or not, but not only clean it up, but definitely implement restoration, but more biodiversity type of planting and permaculture and bringing other types of cultivation to the land as well. So we're just getting fired up with this. It's out the gate and moving along, and we're also having some fun with our charitable organization, Earthkeeper Movement, which is really about environmental awareness and bringing more environmental consciousness to our community and having a very inclusive site that supports urban gardens, educating youth in urban gardens. And a lot of good things underway in the planet as we speak, and we're just doing our small part in it.
I think, too, that when you talk about urban gardens, I mean, there aren't that many vacant lots here in Santa Barbara, but there are a few. Whereas when I'm from Phoenix, where I'm from, dozens of them. Buildings are torn down, stores, shops, whatever, and it's just left vacant. And I know that those could be converted into gardens, even if it was just for a period of time, to grow fruits and vegetables and what have you, for the homeless, for that matter. You know, for the soup kitchens, you know, for the places where the meals would be prepared for people who don't have and are in need. I mean, it just seems that so much land is in a manner of speaking, going to waste. And again, we need places to live. We need places to work. But there has to be a balance. And I remember hearing fairly regularly back in Phoenix where they were declaring a particular building an historical site, and they were going to preserve it, and they were going to restore it. And I thought, well, how many of these are you going to do? Because you can't save them all. I mean, do we really need to? You know, what is the real historical necessity for saving much of what we've already saved? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
And yet we have people who don't have places to live, either by choice or by circumstance, you know, in terms of they lost their home through foreclosure. And now many of these homes are sitting literally vacant, and yet they're building more homes. I'm trying to wrap my head around that concept. Why are you building more homes when there are all these empty homes over here that nobody is living in?
Well, it's just another day of humans gone wild.
Yeah,
and I must share. I mean, I think most folks know, but you know, right now there are 49 million Americans that live in poverty.
Yeah.
16.7 million of them are children. Right here in America, it's almost like, really? And one in five children every single day at some point in time are hungry or malnourished right here. And the idea for us in supporting urban gardens is to bring the youth back into those gardens, not only to grow food in the present time, but to learn how to grow food. And you might have seen just, you know, a few weeks ago, the Department of Agriculture released a study on beehive die-off. Last winter, 31% of beehive colonies died off. And hey, these little busybodies, those are the ones that pollinate our food.
Yeah.
Okay, no bees, bee problems. Oh my gosh, our food production will decline. As a matter of fact, right here in California, the production of almonds, because of beehive colony die-off, because of that, it declined so dramatically that prices have nearly, they're more than doubled with some of our crops. So we've got some serious issues that necessitate thinking of how we can utilize some of these vacant lots, how we can utilize our front yards or our backyards to help cultivate food. And, you know, that doesn't, you know, you got other issues like how we're growing food and what's happening with food and, you know, immunity for, with our foods, with all the GMO that's in the food. So there's a lot going on that we can rectify, each of us, by just coming to the land and educating not simply our youth, but ourselves and getting in the land. So I'm starting to do this more and more myself.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's good to be learning along the way. And but it's also really about understanding that this is essential part of our reconnecting to the earth.
Right.
And reconnecting to one another.
Yeah.
And I like that.
Integral part of community.
It's an integral part. It's an integral part of the community. And my sense is when we're tending to the soil, when we're tending to the garden, we are tending to our own inner garden and our inner sense of who we are and the sense of the power that we hold within our hearts. And that, to me, is what will really make a difference on this planet. And it's not about saving it. It's really, as we said, it's really about keeping the earth and keeping it wild.
You know, you raise an interesting point, and it brought to mind a conversation I had with someone who absolutely refuses to eat any bee products, honey in particular, because they do not want to contribute to the continued enslavement thereof, of the bees. Now, the bees don't eat the honey. They just produce it, and they put it in the honeycomb, and it just sits there. Mm. Now, the beauty of honey is that it won't rot. That is, I mean, it's just absolutely astounding. It's one of the only products on the planet that will not rot, won't go bad. It may crystallize, but that's easily resolved. You just heat it up. And I thought, wait a minute, your logic is, I thought the logic was flawed. If you're not willing to eat the byproducts, the pollen, the propolis, the honey, then how can you justify eating the fruits and vegetables that they pollinated? That's where the labor went. And what this that I'm stating is really going to is logic. What we're talking about here, in my perspective, Adam, has to do with logic. That you don't, that when you make a decision to do something, it needs to be logical. Now, if you want to make it on strictly emotional, for emotional reasons, okay, that's fine. But I'm not going to buy into it because it doesn't make sense. It's especially when I start thinking about a lot of the religious stuff that I was taught as I was growing up. As I grew older, it didn't make sense. It wasn't logical. And I do believe that the Creator, whoever he, she, they may be, gave us logical minds to use to process information to make the best choice, again, in the context of what we've been talking about here on this program.
Well, I hear you on that, and I also hear the person that's shared that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and there really is that logical or illogical rationale, for that matter,
right,
whatever that is, really, what do you apply it to? When you're breathing?
I mean,
where does that really end?
Yeah. Oh, and I got my comeuppance because I used to bicycle everywhere, and they used to say, well, wait a minute, you can't complain about the cars because every time you bicycle, you're expelling that carbon dioxide, and you're contributing to the problem just as much as everyone else. And it's like, okay, so where do we draw the line there?
right. Well, it seems to me it's really begging a bigger question about some of the what's happening in for us in the humanity. How are we walking our walk?
Yeah.
What is it that we're saying? And, you know, I look at this in terms of my conversation and what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And, my focus is not around critique of others or critique of the system. It's more really about how we can live in a greater holistic manner amongst us within our own lives and how we can live together.
Yeah.
And if somebody chooses that, okay, I don't want to eat bees because of this, this, and this, okay, we'll go for it. But by the way, that's applicable to you and your life and what may be happening for you.
Yeah.
That's not necessarily reasonable or rational what is happening for others. And it's not necessarily reasonable or rational or logical for what is the right thing to do on the planet.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
So it's kind of silly, but it creates conversation and it sparks ideas about how we can live a more meaningful, purposeful lives. And if that's the choice people make, then so be it. But that's not the choice that I would make because I enjoy my honey.
As do I.
And
as
I support bees.
And I carry around a small plastic container of bee pollen. And I take a few granules every so often. It's good for the immune system. It's one of the interesting things I have found over the years is there have been so many different foods that people have found. They say, oh, it's the perfect food. It contains it all. It's all you need. I'm thinking, yeah, but... You know, I feel kind of bad for my dogs because we feed them the same food every meal, and that's got to get boring. So why would I do that to myself? And I do try to give them treats every so often to spice things up a little, but I know that's just the way it is. It's like cattle. Mm-hmm. They naturally eat grass. That's what they eat, and that's okay for them, and they enjoy it because that's what they eat. They don't eat grain, you know. I've talked with some people who know the biology of various species on the planet, and we're not feeding them what's naturally for them. Whether we are doing this for the purposes of providing for our tables or their pets, you know what I'm saying? It's like going back to what you're saying. There's no judgment here. It's just. What is it that they eat? What is it that we're supposed to be eating to sustain our lives, both literally as well as metaphorically?
Well, it's exactly, and it's not only what they're eating, it's what we're, the kind of antibiotics and what we're pumping into them. And, you know, as we speak, cattle production is at a six-decade low right now. Mm. This was just out last week, and primarily due to drought and other global warming conditions. So prices are rising dramatically, and it does beg the question, like you just brought up, which is a really cool question, is like, what feeds us?
Yeah.
What feeds us on every single level of our being? In our physical level, we get, okay, got that. Our emotional level, what is feeding that?
Mm-hmm.
On our spiritual level,
yeah.
What capacity, what are we holding in our life that is allowing us to express that inner light, that inner wealth of what we are here to share?
Yeah.
And how does that, is that being supported within the lives that we're living and choosing freely every day? So it really is, what does feed us? And what is it that is meaningful to us? And when it becomes that we are feeding our physical sense of being at the expense of our emotional being?
Yeah.
Is it at the expense of who we are spiritually? Does it cut off our connection to the universe and creation as a whole, or God, as some may say? These are really good questions, and I ultimately hope everybody's exploring them, because I'm sitting here with you and I'm thinking about, you know, I like that stuff because it really says, hey, be conscious. What are you eating? You know, what are you doing? Are you driven towards just living a sex-filled, life of eating and whatever that is to, and as a kind of an ex-hedonist, I get that.
Yeah.
You know, I still enjoy the finer things in life. And I don't think anybody's saying, oh, you got to dump all that stuff.
Right, right.
It's really saying embracing that the greater capacity of who we are,
exactly.
If you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, before we wrap up our program, we got three final questions for you. And
yeah.
I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program. It's been a pleasure to have you in studio. I always love having in studio guests, as
love
I said at the
here.
Front of the program.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
Who is Adam Hall?
Adam Hall is a light that is in the world today, and he wasn't always that way. He really lived a life that ensheathed that light, and it became something that he separated himself from, and ultimately came to a place where the 1.0 Adam is now evolving into 2.0 and beyond, because as we all know, or if we don't, we should, that we all are really infinite beings.
Mm.
And so Adam Hall is someone who is showing up in that greater capacity that his soul and his light hopes to share within the world and to bring a greater service and a greater sense of purpose to our humanity that is dearly challenged in its own way right now. So that's who Adam Hall is.
And what is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
The sense that we are all connected to the earth, and we are all connected to one another. And in the wilderness, as I shared it, I found the preservation of myself. And what that really meant to me, what that meant to me and means to me right now, is that the gifts of Mother Nature can share with all of us. They're readily available. They're free. Everyone can access nature and the planet wherever you may be at any point in time, whether it's just seeing the sun or looking at a beautiful flower. You can do it anytime, any moment. It's free to help people to recognize the power of that connectivity and to bring a greater sense to our land, to support wholeness in our environments, not the degradation of our environments. And it begins with cleaning up my own garden, but ultimately can be fulfilled sharing the outer garden that we all hold together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what I'm here to speak to and to bring that into the modern, postmodern world, Richard, for that matter, of allowing a greater sustainable business and bringing sustainability to business and wholeness to business and not simply predatory capitalist old kind of paradigm to business.
And you alluded to it a few moments ago. How powerful are we as human beings?
Infinitely. And what that means is that all things are connected, and there is really no space between any of it. And talk about power, think about that. If everything is connected, then you have heard people can move mountains, they can go through walls. Now, we are talking energetics here.
Mm-hmm.
We're not just talking on the physical and emotional level. We're talking on the wholeness of it all. And the idea really of power is that when we seek power for our own purpose, as a means to our end, what I found when I was doing that was it came at the expense of liberty and the own freedom of myself to have an expression. But when we are embracing the liberation of our spirit and not the ensheathing of it and bringing that part into the world in terms of showing up and bringing its presence into the world, what I found is that liberation is like a power that I could never even imagine nor even put words to.
Adam C. Hall, thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Great to be here with all of you.
Adam C. Hall, founder of the Earth Keeper Alliance. Go to earthkeepermovement.org, earthkeepermovement.org, to find out more as well as about the book, The Earth Keeper. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.